Brad is on the line. Hi, Brad. How are you doing today?
I am. How are you?
I am, too. But I am also particularly confused.
Here we go again. I haven't heard this for a while.
Well, I'm stumped. You gave me a puzzle that I can't seem to put back together. A Rubik's Cube, so to speak. Although I think I did that successfully back in the 70s. Was it the 80s? I don't remember. What you think you do know can be devastating to your spiritual progress. Now, if I'm to take that literally, and I usually do, and follow it to its logical conclusion, what I do know, I'll have to throw out because I want to progress spiritually. I'm caught in a trap. The knowledge that I have accumulated by schooling, reading books, physical, hands-on experience is all useless to me if I want to progress spiritually. That's where I arrive when I read that statement. So I need some help to get across this bridge, buddy.
Do you mind reading that statement again so I hear exactly what you're responding to?
Okay, I'm going to read your paragraph verbatim. The old saying, what you don't know can't hurt you, is the antithesis of what you think you do know, which is doubly mental, can be devastating to your spiritual progress. So all my knowledge and experience is devastating to my moving forward spiritually. That's what I get from reading that. Am I wrong?
Probably. Would you like to be made right?
I'd love to. That's why I'm asking the question.
Well, let's put it this way. It's the thing, it's the very thing, and I think I wrote it in the article. What I'm picking up on is the same old thing that causes us the problems in the first place, which is when we think we know, which is what happened to Adam and Eve, whether it's a mythical story or not a mythical story, they thought brilliantly because after they ate that fruit that they saw they were uncovered and that, oh my gosh, they had to cover themselves up. God didn't give a crap about them being naked. But that fruit did. It made them think they were naked and they weren't covered up. That's what revealed their utter stupidity. And you making that statement, it's kind of similar.
Let me give you an example, because I'm still in need of straightening. Hypothetically, I'm consulting for a software company. And that software company is building a particular application. And part of the application building process usually uses existing pieces and parts of other softwares that have already been developed. And we have to create a procedure for selecting the best possible software piece. You know, kind of like a gear in a watch. And we have to choose the best gear out of 20 gears. You have to come up with some form of objective criteria to narrow the field and then finally decide which software to make. Well, that process and that digging for knowledge and understanding of each particular unique piece of software to see whether it fits is a waste of time. I can just go close my door, go into my closet and say, Daddy, which is the best piece of software for me to use? Now, that may work, and I haven't tested it yet, but it lines up with what you're saying because the procedure that I just outlined for you is what the standard procedure is for selecting software, is to develop a set of criteria, investigate the possible options, and choose the best one based on your criteria. So you're saying to me, I can toss that out, and there's no point in doing any of that. I can do it all spiritually. Well, is that true? Is it not true?
Let's put the metaphor in its context. Metaphor has to do with dealing in the spiritual realm and dealing from the perspective of what God wants, and what you're doing is trying to apply that to a specific thing related to physical realm. It's a mixing of the apples and oranges, as we might say.
Or salt water and fresh water.
Well, salt water and fresh water being mixed just makes a dilution of salt.
Okay.
And let's leave it alone. We're meandering over nothing.
It's nothing? Okay, so then it's something in my mind that when I read your statement, it's not a universal principle, is it?
No, it's not universal.
It's not universal.
Brian.
Yeah.
It's stop trying to make universal principles out of something Brad Cullen wrote. Would you please?
Okay, so let's say that this is not a universal principle. When is the right time to apply this principle and not the right time? Because you make the point twice. When is the right time to stop and say, I don't know beans, help? How do I know when I'm in the right place to ask that question?
I do it when I sense that I'm out to lunch. Maybe I'm a little more sensitive to being out to lunch than you. Or perhaps it's just that you aren't as out to lunch as I am as often.
I don't think I could agree with that. But I do have a strong reliance on rational, logical thought and process.
We've dealt with that in the past, and you really got to the place where you said, be merciful and to be a sinner. You might want to think about that again because it changed your life back then. Maybe we can change your life during this podcast.
The thing is, I don't spend all my day pursuing spiritual progress. I spend most of my day trying to earn a living, and most people pay me for knowledge, wisdom, and the ability to produce results. And so when I see a statement like yours, it creates a stumble in me that says, well, gee, maybe I'm going about this the wrong way. Maybe I shouldn't rely on knowledge and wisdom and process and results. I should just rely on spiritual progress.
Maybe the question you might want to consider is, Dad, is this one of those times, one of those incidents that it would be best to turn to you and say, help, I don't know beans? Or shall I just rely on the knowledge I have?
Well, that's good advice.
Because I want you to control everything in my life, including my business, including my efforts in every area.
Okay.
For me, I know it's necessary.
Okay. So then what you're suggesting to me is to not just be habitually relying on one or the other, but to ask in the moment. Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You said you would straighten out my thinking, and you certainly did. Let's talk about placebos. Placebo response, where the expectation of receiving healing is sufficient in the person to receive the healing, even though they're getting, what, sugar and water, right?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think I've seen some drug studies where the placebo did just as well, if not better, than the drug that they were testing.
About 6 months ago, I read an article that suggests in certain incidents that placebos actually work better than drugs, than the drug that they're testing against.
The message that I get from your bringing that up is that it's important to have your expectation in line with what it is you want to achieve. And so if we're talking about or wanting to achieve a cessation of the aging process and then even after that a reversal, then we should have an expectation of success.
Well, I have in my infinite wisdom suggested that one of the basics of faith is believing, and that desire and expectation are two essential ingredients or elements of that.
Yeah.
So if you're not expecting it, then you're not really believing it. Now, there are times when I can't get myself to that point, and that's exactly what I meant by not trusting in our thought processes, because when those kind of thoughts hit me, then it's time to say, whoa, stop. I'm eating the fruit from that dang tree again. Daddy, help me. I don't know beans. I don't know what I'm doing here, and why on earth am I not expecting when you have told me, you promised that nothing is impossible to me if I believe enough. And expectation is a essential for that process.
I have to say that I have the same issue frequently about certain types of things, not everything. You know, I expect to have a roof over my head, and I do. I expect to have food in my refrigerator, and there always seems to be that food. And I expect to have a loving, caring family and a group of close friends, and I always do have those things. But those things that I don't automatically expect, the things that I have belief systems and structures for, I have to work hard to be successful in business, or I have to, you know, there's a whole bunch of list of have-tos that prevent me from just expecting things to happen. And that is, I guess, germane to your last podcast where you talked about getting your belief in a more receptive place or productive place, however you want to say that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So the example that you give, once again, is our good old friend Roger Bannister, which leads me to this very, very, very important question. Is Roger Bannister the only person in the last 2,000 years that you can think of that overcame a popular concept and belief? Is there none other?
Are you giving me a bad time because I'm redundant?
Well, redundancy is good, and I'll tell you why redundancy is frequently good, because I've noticed a pattern that you seem to say the same things over and over again in different ways about different topics. And I do need to hear them over and over again in different ways and apply to a new topic. So, that works, but gee, I'm getting tired of Roger Bannister.
I tell you what, I promise you that I'll dig into my rather large bag of examples, and in future articles, I will avoid Roger Bannister. But I do love that one, I'm sorry. You know, Eve gets very upset at me because I can listen to the same old song over and over and over again. So I'm admitting to it as a fault. I apologize, dear Mr. Publisher, and I will attempt to do better in the future.
You going to pick a new one?
Yes. That I can say over and over. I can't, you know, I guess why I stick to that one is people still say things like, I can't believe it, it's never worked, it won't work, it can't work, and, you know, that one is so simple and so obvious, you know, because it's dramatic.
Yeah.
Yes, let's talk about it for a minute.
You mean you haven't talked about it enough? Look, let me give you something else. Okay, there's this.
You brought it up.
Oh my God! Well, I brought it up to ask you to please come up with some other guy who was told one thing was impossible and overcame it, found a way to overcome it.
I'll do. Oh, hey, I got a great one.
Sure.
I've got a publisher who he's a good example. Right, it won't work. It can't work. The Bible's against you. Science is against you. And then the very next day, he says, holy mackerel, it works. I'm just trying to get other people to see that. And I give the same example over and over and over, and you still come up with the same arguments. But you're right. I'm just being defensive. I apologize. I will come up with it. There are many, many, many examples of that. I will come up with one.
You say a little bit further, just after you talk about our good friend Roger Bannister, changing deeply ingrained systems of belief is not merely difficult, it is impossible.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know how to overcome that. I mean, we just did a podcast a little while ago where an NLP guy went in and he helped his mom overcome limiting beliefs about healing from cancer. And they were pretty deeply ingrained systems that she had structured around her. And it was difficult, but it wasn't impossible.
Well, he was dealing with a rational person who trusted him and listened to him and believed him. Now, the point I'm making is, when you get to those kinds of things, that's easy. Getting to a place where you can persuade somebody just to look at the possibility of something being true. If it means a change in their belief system, it's nigh on to impossible. But if you have the attitude that it is not, that impossible is meaningless because nothing is impossible if you believe enough. And yeah, so I said it wrong.
Okay.
And you're right. But that was the point of it, thank you.
Right. And so typically people who are holding on to particular beliefs, ingrained belief systems, are holding on to them because, like we said in last podcast, they're convenient truths. And they produce some sort of positive impact in the believer's life. And so the question is can you understand or can you help the person get beyond what they think is the positive impact of dying and getting old? You know, and we have some romanticism built up around that, don't we? You get to be a grandpa and bounce little kids on your knee. You know, the dirty old man syndrome. Do you remember back in the 70s, a program called Laugh-In?
Yes.
Okay, and there was that little old man who wore a trench coat and a hat, and he rolled around on a tricycle, and he used to pinch the girls' bums and all that sort of stuff, and he got away with it because why? He was a dirty old man. And it's okay to be like that if you're an old man. My father, an elderly gentleman of 79, he flirts incessantly with the waitresses, and he gets away with murder, and they just ignore him. If I were to say that, I'm quite sure I'd either get tossed out or slapped with a sexual harassment suit. You know, so there's some sort of romanticism built up about, oh, how about this one? On Golden Pond. Oh, God. How wonderful and romantic it is to grow old and die together. I had romantic ideas associated with my wonderful wife of how great it was going to be that we were going to grow old together. Now, that's a pretty deeply ingrained romantic emotional desire that is going to stand in the way, or will try to stand in the way, of my not aging. Because my wife may not have the same belief systems that I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I could come up with a placebo for her and have her take one of these sugar pills every day, anti-aging sugar pills.
You know, that might work.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I understand your point, and it's well taken. It's just like so many other things that we talk about that you and I have proved for ourselves. We haven't proved this one yet. It's a thesis. I believe it, and I expect it to come to pass. Expect this to have more resistance even than some of the other things that you really needed to be convinced of. This is a tough one. There's not just emotional ties, and you brought, you know, that you just brought up, those are valid points. They have religious convictions that you're supposed to grow older than that. Both of those things. Am I right, or am I?
Absolutely, and it's not just those convictions. It's there are plenty of convictions about death and dying built into our society.
Yeah, I think you made a rather eloquent statement on the last podcast about, I don't remember what it was at the time, but just amazed me how true it was. We're emotionally caught up in our beliefs to the point that it's threatening when you come along with something different.
Right, so if I can let go of some of those beliefs, or at least open up my mind to the opportunity that there are others, and then build up some form of expectation that I may have some success, I got a chance.
Well, you know, now you're getting to the beginning of this interview or conversation, whatever we want to call it, where you were taking issue with my beating up on the thought process. But to me, that's a perfect example. We think that any body of knowledge, I don't care what the academic source is, we tend to believe, well, this is true. And forever I've taken that on because I've just seen scientifically, I've seen medically, in every arena but religion, there is an openness to new. There's an openness to something that's different. But when people hold a religious view, including scientists, you know, that was the example I used forever about sorry to use old examples again, but I think it's priceless where scientists that were brought up and caught up in Newtonian or classic physics could not accept even the proofs, the experimental proofs of quantum mechanics. It just, they had to be dragged into it. Why? You know, because they believed in what was. And when they find out that what was is being replaced by what is, they resist. I resist, you resist, we all resist it. So, you know, I'm as guilty as anybody. I've got to point my fingers at somebody else.
Well, the next place that it seems that Dad is leading you is to take a look at some spiritual causes to aging. That's very interesting, spiritual causes to aging. I'm looking forward to that conversation. I believe that I can get my expectation in line.
I think it's probably the greatest challenge we've taken on. I know it's very difficult to get people to see it as a possibility, but it is a possibility. We've discussed this at times. Scientifically, we know. I mean, there we go. I'm going to look. I'm going to do some research on some really good medical background that the process of aging really can be stopped and reversed. And so we can start there so that people see the possibility from their own frame of reference, you know, not just religious frame, but a scientific and medical frame. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Daddy. I think that's kind of inspired. No, I think it's definitely inspired. I'm being shown this moment that there really is. Now I really sound like a wacko, but that's okay. I'm being shown this moment that we're not dealing with nonsense. This is fact. This is good stuff. It's going to be good. Wow, I can hardly wait to get back to writing, because it's going to be heavy duty.
Okay, buddy. Well, write it. Come on. Let's go. I'm ready to receive. I'm expecting.
Okay. Well.
Thanks, Brad.
I presume you're hanging up on me.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
Thank you for the call.
Bye.